Who've made Democracy Now! Possible throughout all these years, our staff and volunteers, over 1,400 public radio and television stations around the world, and especially our listeners and viewers.
Let's see if we can hold this up. Don't forget, you can keep up with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Roku. Thank you, everyone, for supporting News with a Heart, for helping us go to where the silence is. Happy birthday, everyone. You all made it possible. You made it possible for us all to celebrate Democracy Now!'s 23rd anniversary. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Abe and Joe take on fascists in the police bureau.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, Demilitarizing the Pacific, on Wednesday, February 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Peace House in Portland. Demilitarizing the Pacific features three indigenous women speaking on the destruction of a coral reef to expand a military base in Japan, curbing military buildup in Guam, and peace and justice in Hawaii. Again, that's Demilitarizing the Pacific on Wednesday, February 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Peace House, 2116 Northeast 18th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You were talking to me, but you didn't know that the thing had already been flipped to the other place. Yeah.
Well, I want to disavow the notion that the police per se are fascist.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's... I'm going to take the position that there are people within the police department who function as if the police were fascist. Not that the police per se, or their philosophy, or the membership thereof, are necessarily fascist.
And specifically, we're going to talk about one police officer who seems to have displayed sympathy with fascists.
It's even more complicated than that. Let's talk about this.
Oh, wait a second, though.
Oh, wait. We need to do stuff.
I'm Abe. You're Joe.
I'm Joe. I can remember that.
Yes. By the transitive property of talk show naming, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Yeah.
On KBOO 90.7 FM.
In Portland.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I expect many of you are going to have a lot to say about today's topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is our topic?
If you hadn't heard, the Willamette Week last week published a story revealing a long text message exchange between an officer in the Portland Police Bureau and Joey Gibson, leader of the Patriot Prayer organization based out of Vancouver, Washington. Patriot Prayer, along with the Proud Boys, are the fascists who have made a habit of walking in the light of day on the streets of Portland over the past year and a half or so, sometimes clashing violently with leftist Antifa counter-protesters.
Right.
Many of you who have attended those events, myself included, have observed time and again a Portland police posture that appears to protect and shelter the fascist demonstrators while directing their attention on subduing the leftist counter-protesters.
Right.
This is clear in everything from their deployment patterns to their body language to the actual actions they take later on after these two groups have clashed with one another. Time and again, the police have seemed to favor the white supremacist marchers rather than the lefties. And these text messages would seem to confirm what many people have suspected for a long time, that there are sympathizers within the police bureau who harmonized with the fascists.
Well, it's interesting how the police are covering this, and how the Oregonian, for example, neutralizes the what seems to you and I to be an outright a supporting of the right wing element against the left. But to begin with, there's according to the Oregonian, a Lieutenant Jeffrey Nyla.
Sure,
yeah, Nyla exchanged hundreds of texts and emails with Joey Gibson, the outspoken leader of the Patriot Prayer Group.
Yes.
Now, what the Oregonian is saying is, well, this is how it should be, where everybody can talk to everybody and it's all open and above board, and gee whiz, the left wingers just won't talk with the police. Of course, there's no effort by the police, particularly, as far as I can tell, to establish that kind of relationship, nor, and I want to make this clear, should there be any effort on the part of the police beyond laying out the rules of demonstrations and so on, to be chatting with the various political groups, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats or the Socialists or the Fascists or whomever.
You're saying there's no reason at all for that contact to happen?
I think there were reasons, but the reasons are not in the public interest per se.
Now, according to the research that I've done around this event, this sort of outreach to opposing sides in what could be a possibly dangerous standoff, this sort of thing happens, usually with the intent of trying to avoid or forestall any sort of violent clash between the two sides, meaning that the police will reach out to the liaisons with either side and say, hey, you know, let's all do this in a way that where nobody gets hurt or no, you know, punches are thrown, no weapons are pulled, that sort of thing. That, to my understanding, is a fairly common tactic, not just here in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
But elsewhere.
Yeah, I can right. tell you, I can tell you that when I first essayed to organize a peace march back in 1960, I was asked to come in to talk to somebody from the what used to be called the Red Squad, you know, the intelligence division of the police department, a guy named Trumbull, a nice guy, actually, in terms of his presentation to me. And he essentially warned me that doing a peace march would support the Reds. And I think I was a cocky youth, and I said, well, I think we can exploit the Reds to the end of having a peaceful demonstration and, in fact, opposing the nuclear holocaust that seemed to await us all. Hmm. And, you know, I don't know what he thought about that. For years, he kind of trailed me, followed me, paid attention to me. Occasionally, I would reach out to him. At one point, the right wing of that time, which were mostly older conservatives, had a stencil of a hammer and sickle that they would paint on people's houses or cars. And when that happened to me, I told Charlie Trumbull, I said, look, you know, I'm sure you're in contact with these other people. And he said, yeah. I said, well, you might want to point out to them that anybody can do that. You know, that's a bad thing to do, and it can be done in the dead of night by anyone. And lo and behold, magically, that particular stencil and that particular activity disappeared. So that told me, at least implied to me, that Charlie, in his intelligence role, could reach out to these people and essentially say, cool it, and that they would do that. It's important to know that. Now, that's way back, 1960. Mm-hmm. So I knew from that point on, and I would see it repeatedly, that there was an intervention by the police to control outbreaks of what they would characterize as violent or inappropriate behavior. And this was a quid pro quo of that time. I never felt particularly that there was an intimacy taking place between the police and right-wing groups, and I don't know that there wasn't. I just never felt it at that time. Now, what we're seeing today, however, is to me a clear break of any kind of normal protocol, because we have the police directly exchanging information with the right-wing Patriot Prayer and so on.
Yeah,
groups who I would characterize as the shock troops of a fascist effort.
Oh, they most definitely are. I don't know if people recall the show we aired right after the August rally last year down on the waterfront, in which I went down and spoke with a number of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think describing them as shock troops of the alt-right movement is completely accurate. Now, where these the text exchanges go off the rails. Now, we just established that as a means of attempting to forestall violence, police bureaus, departments all over the place will reach out to people on both sides to try to calm people down. That seems to me like just good sense. This, though, we have Lieutenant Nia texting to Gibson, telling him where groups of Antifa are going to be ahead of time, telling him, listen, we're not going to exercise a warrant we have for the arrest of one of your guys. Just tell him to make sure he doesn't act out inappropriately and he'll be fine. We have Lieutenant Nia congratulating Gibson on his candidacy for the United States Senate. And this is very, very friendly behavior between a member of the police bureau. In fact, the leader of the group that is within the bureau that handles these types of public situations, showing a really inappropriate level of coziness with an alt-right winger. And we don't know how deep this goes within the police bureau. But again, as I mentioned earlier, and as City Councilwoman Joanne Hardesty has stated recently, this confirms what a lot of us have thought for a long time.
Well, and there's other evidence, other indicators. I won't say evidence. When our new police chief was brought on board, the person who was then kind of our overseer, yours and mine, here at KBOO, mm-hmm. and I agreed that we would reach out to her and invite her to come to either be recorded off the location here, since she wasn't allowed to bring a gun into this place, and have a conversation, or she could come here and we would talk. And I even offered to set up a group of questions which we would stay within so that she could be well prepared and that there would not be a gotcha situation. However, she never, I don't know if she got our message or not, I can't say, but going through the police process, we never got a response. Meanwhile, Lars Larson, who is a well-known right-wing talk show host, did have an interview with her. How much you can judge of that? What does that mean? Well, I think it means that we're already seeing a side-taking on the part of the police, and essentially an assumption that the right is the establishment and the left is the other. This is a very dangerous attitude and a very not unusual with police anywhere, ever, but it is obviously not appropriate. And it is particularly not appropriate in a city like Portland, where there has been a resurgence of liberal concern.
I'm asking to borrow your copy of the Oregonian.
Okay.
This is great radio.
Yeah, right. The thing about radio is you have to use sign language.
That's very true.
But this is really an important thing to understand. Now, over the time that I have been off and on involved with the left-wing stuff, during the Vietnam War, when there was more and more aggressive activity and big peace marches, one such march, I developed a little group of people who would go into buildings along the route, and as long as doors were unlocked, we would go up onto the roof where the American flags were, and we would lower them to half-mast as the march proceeded. And we agreed, as a group, that nobody would break down a door, nobody would go past a lock, nobody would violate a no trespassing sign. Because in those days, things were pretty open. So we did that. We went to building after building, and we lowered the flags. At one point, our group came to a building where the door was marginally locked. And one guy in our group suddenly said, let's kick it in. Let's get in there, and we'll change it. And everybody said, no, 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 no. And we did not do that. Within a few months, I ran into that same person who was supposedly in our group of war protesters in police uniform. And I realized he was what used to be called an agent provocateur. Mm-hmm. That is, a person setting us up for a violation of law. Fortunately, we held to our discipline and we didn't break the law. I think it's important to understand that really happened. Now, was that directed from the top? I have no way of knowing. But the fact of the matter is that this guy was spying on us. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand that the police do use spies. And they use spies not to discover bank robberies or evil crime per se, but rather to control the left. And I don't think that same spying process takes place with the right.
I don't think it does. At least we don't have any evidence that it does.
No.
But in this case, though, we have evidence of a cordial relationship between an officer in the Portland Police Bureau, who, as I mentioned, is the leader of the unit that is deployed when there's the danger of violent clashes between two opposing groups of protesters.
I guess it's the intelligence division.
They have another name for it, but I will get that in just a moment. But I want to touch briefly upon the official reaction to this blockbuster of an article in the Willamette Week. The mayor has, of course, called for an internal investigation of the police department to be conducted by the police chief. And if you can hear the sarcasm in my voice, it's because, really, are there any results that are ever produced when police bureaus are asked to investigate themselves? Is there any appropriate discipline that's ever dealt out when this is left to the internal devices of the police bureau? I think usually the answer is no, particularly with regard to the use of lethal force by officers. Joanne Hardesty has gone on the record saying that this investigation needs to be conducted by an independent outside investigator who is selected by groups in the community, which I think, in my unexpert opinion, inexpert opinion?
Yes,
disexpert,
inexpert.
Okay. is much more likely to provide a fair and objective analysis of what's happening than an internal investigation.
Well, remember that the federal government essentially told the Portland Police Bureau to straighten up their act.
Yes, they did.
And as far as I know, nothing much came of that.
Yeah. Here's what the mayor went on to say. He said, quote, "The texts appear to unnecessarily encourage Joey Gibson, the leader of a group that perpetrates hate speech and violence," which is an odd formulation. They appear to unnecessarily encourage Gibson. Does that imply there's a situation in which Gibson would necessarily need to be encouraged? I don't understand that.
I don't get it.
I don't know.
But that's...
That's just weird. Anyway, he's gone on to say that he, and this was on Friday, Wheeler said that he and Police Chief Outlaw would provide training for officers, quote, around how to identify white supremacy. Okay, here's a little advice for the police bureau. If you go to one of these gatherings, the people who are flying Trump flags and wearing patriot prayer gear and wearing body armor and carrying shields.
Yeah, and
are
Confederate
white
flags.
And Confederate flags.
And Nazi flags.
Those are the white supremacists. That's how you identify them. And if I might be so bold, that's where your attention should be focused, on the white supremacists who are walking through our streets looking to rumble.
And I think it's important to understand that they're actually a group from Washington State. They cross the bridge to, I believe, create incidents. I'm not going to say make trouble, to create incidents in Portland.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I don't think we can lay this all entirely on Washington State.
No.
Yeah, Gibson's from Washington State. Patriot Prayer is headquartered there. The local chapter of the Proud Boys is headquartered there. But I imagine there are plenty of homegrown Portland white supremacists who come out to join these folks.
Yeah, and the situation is, in its combative aspects, where both sides armor up, very serious and very dangerous. One of the things that I advocate, which I think most of the left-wing anti-fascists don't agree with, is that one should take a nonviolent stance. If, for example, and this is my imagination speaking, not what happened, if, for example, there is a potential clash between the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer and the anti-fascists should essentially use the techniques preached by Gandhi and Martin Luther King. That is, they should sit down. They should reduce their dangerous presentation of self. And they should not budge. They should not be afraid. And they should be willing to take whatever comes thereby. I think if that happened regularly, pretty soon the whole fascist presentation would be not only de-escalated, but possibly disappear.
Yeah, I would agree. And if you've observed the Antifa forces, and I think forces is an accurate term to use here, at these gatherings, they are armored for a fight. They are armed for a fight.
Well, we don't know them. I don't know them.
I don't know them either.
I have tried to reach out. I don't know. I have no contacts there. I would welcome them to come on our show at some time or even call in today to defend their position.
Yeah.
But we don't know them.
When I went down and conducted those interviews in August, nobody from the Antifa side would speak to me. They were unified in their refusal to speak to me.
Well, apparently that's their discipline.
That's their discipline, and that's fine. It just makes it more difficult for us to understand where they're coming from. Now, it's not their obligation to tell us where they're coming
from.
But that's the effect of not speaking to members of the media. The fascists, ironically, were happy to talk to me. Even one fine gentleman from Arkansas who came all the way here to express his Confederate values and support the Confederate values being displayed here in the Pacific Northwest.
Confederate?
Confederate. Oh, yes. So this officer, Lieutenant Jeff Nia, he is the head of the Bureau's Rapid Response Team. That is the group that is deployed to patrol large-scale political protests.
Oh, that's when they ride around on this jeepy car and hanging on the side of it?
I don't know if those are the same folks.
I think so.
Yeah, but if the members of the Bureau, whom I've seen at these events, are part of the Rapid Response Team, then body armor is part of that team's regular regalia. They don't mess around. Let's go to the phones. LJ, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I am aging gracefully. Otherwise, I'm fine. I just want to bring up two quick points.
Yes.
If you recall, there was an altercation in August between Antifa and the Patriot Prayer Group.
Yeah.
Where 345 cell phones were confiscated by the Portland Police Bureau.
Hmm.
All of those cell phones belonged to Antifa. Not one cell phone was taken from the Patriot Prayer Group.
I didn't know that. Is that really true?
That is a fact, Jack.
Where did you hear this, and where can we confirm this?
I go to your geek machine. I read it in Willamette Week.
Okay.
All right, and you can find that out. All right, let's talk about the rifles that were found on the parking garage in proximity to where the demonstration was taking place. If this is going to be a peaceful demonstration, why were there 14 or 15 long guns found on the roof of this parking garage? And the Portland Police Bureau had absolutely said it was fine.
I think your rhetorical question can't be answered except to wonder. Now, you're saying that these weapons, these long guns, were obviously part of the Proud Boy contingent?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you listened to Amy Goodman's show this morning, that was one of the key points to her story. And with all due respect to Amy Goodman, she pronounced Willamette Week.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway, it's an omtom. Anyway, I'm 80 years old, Joe, and I was always raised to believe that law enforcement is supposed to be non-biased. And it's quite obvious whose side they're on.
Okay.
Anyway,
well,
thank you.
Thank you for the call. I do want to emphasize one thing. Historically, and I can speak of this with my background and training in American history, the fact of the matter is the police, in almost, I believe in any situation that I have ever read about where there was conflict, the police sided with the ownership class and with the right against the left. This is not a new thing. This is not a surprise. But its grossness in this case, and its strength, its deliberateness is extremely disturbing. And this is what we're addressing here. So let's go back to the phones. I want to remind people that you're listening to KBOO, and the phone number is 231-8187. Please call us. And Edie, you're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to give some context where a young white person came enthusiastically to different left groups in which I was, trying to get us to talk with the same cop, big sales pitch. Why we said no, what is the history and what are the consequences of talking with them, and my observations of the seat matter, security, and different groups where the cops are violently committing crimes and planting false evidence and lying. So first, each of these leftist groups I was a part of, this person would come in and say, oh, this person's really friendly. Well, I don't care if they're friendly or not. My psychopath husband was friendly. It's just abusive, rapist, torturer, and, you know, a perpetual liar. And the reason why I don't talk with cops is that I got over the idea that I had to be brave and get over my own personal issues with the cops and use my white privilege to protect people of color and vulnerable people by de-escalating by talking to cops. Well, talking with the cops is not going to be a way that I am going to try to de-escalate and be an ally. There are people, and there are good times, when we do need to have police liaison, and I, some particular individuals that I see have done an excellent job. They never violate our integrity. They're very wise. They know you don't give any information in any way can be used in any contorted way. They reduce violence, but I'm never going to be one of those police liaisons. And the reason why I tell people never talk to the cops is because even if you simply say you're stepping on my toe or something, if you can be photographed or videographed as talking to them, and it can cause divisiveness, distrust within the movement. And the biggest weapon of the police is fear, the control is through fear. And part of that is that we turn upon each other in a circular firing squad. Another reason I don't talk with the cops is because even though I may be in all good intention saying what I think is helpful, I don't know if there might be some secretive stuff in which what I'm saying actually is factual. Any fact that I'm with someone and they can, you know, pick up any data from my cell phone without me handing it over is linking them up with other folks who then put at risk by association. People are arrested over and over and sentenced and tortured and killed with no factual, there's no justification to murder anyway, but, you know, for
Well, wait, you're not suggesting that, Edie, I'm just wanting to be clear here. You're not suggesting that murder and so on are taking place here?
Of course.
Okay.
And by police. And the majority of the people that I know of that they've killed, there isn't a lot of press coverage. There are people that I guess the cops or the media think are offendable or whatever. But so, yes, I'm saying do not talk with the cops. And the reason is they, by law, can lie and do lie to us. They and the DA make false promises and false threats for plea deals, et cetera, for turning state evidence. They will arrest different people and let them out with different charges at different times, just to make us not know who's a police infiltrator, saboteur, provocateur, and who is on our side who's just being funky with and their lives being ruined so that they cannot get work by rightists and they cannot have a community with leftists. So do not talk with the cops. Do not trust them. They consistently throughout history have been on the side of the factory owners, the slave owners, the land grabbers, the environmental destroyers and polluters. And what we need to do is create an alternative and do not ever call the cops. You can look at critical resistance online and critical resistance in PDX and see alternatives and reasons why we do not call the cops. We can find other ways to solve our problems without the use of fear, violence, or the state.
Okay, well, thank you.
Wait a second, one quickly, Edie. Are you suggesting that we should not call on the police to investigate murders, to investigate burglaries, rapes, assaults?
We already have a lot of documentation by Antifa, Falling Down, et cetera, where we already have incredible evidence of violent crimes, rape, physical assault, murder, et cetera. And the pictures of the perpetrators and the police have all this information and they don't arrest the white supremacists who are guilty of that or the police who are guilty of that.
Okay, I think you're dodging my question.
And also, I have beloved ones that have had 25-year and 22-year rape kits that still have not been investigated when they were given everything
on
a platter.
That's the one thing about what you just said that is true.
Investigated, they have not prosecuted, they have not been fair in protecting us from violent crimes, usually those violent crimes against women and vulnerable communities. So, yes, I definitely do not talk with cops, and I do not trust them. And certainly when it comes to protest action specifically, I do not encourage anyone else to trust or talk with the cops. And if you are arrested, stay silent and get your attorney. You can talk to National Lawyers Guild. The phone number is 503-902-5340.
Can you repeat that number?
503-902-5340 for National Lawyers Guild if you need legal assistance. And you can also talk to the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene for protest legal defense. I had to get off the phone. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm in a quandary here. First of all, I do not believe that the police per se are necessarily ideologically so corrupted that they would not operate appropriately in case of a committed crime. For example, a burglary in your home.
Well, she's right that there are thousands of unexamined rape kits.
Yeah, I was going to go to that. Yes, there certainly are. There certainly seems to be a disproportionate failure to deal with violent sex crime. I also think that police are people. I have actually had several friendships with people, I'm going to admit this, that who are in law enforcement. And I suppose people will say, well, you're betraying the cause or whatever. I don't think so. I do think that the history of policing in Portland is very mixed and interesting. For example, most people don't know that the reason why the police have a union now is because the Longshoremen's Union, the ILWU, put up informational pickets at the docks, or rather the police had informational pickets at the suggestion of the ILWU, which shut down the Port of Portland some many years ago, which resulted in the city agreeing to allow the police to unionize. This was a cooperative effort. Remember, the ILWU was, at that time at least, the archetypal left-wing, powerful longshoremen's union on the West Coast. So these things happen. Odd things go on. Strange alliances are made. So when one overgeneralizes, one misses the complexity of it all. On the other hand, it is clear that there has always been a certain level of bias on the part of the police institutionally and in terms of officer behavior with regard to the left. And we've seen that countless times over and over again. The fact that this one police officer was more or less assigned to take to follow me, to follow my career, whatever, is an indication of what goes on. And I want to emphasize, I was not an important figure. I was I'm a gregarious person. Therefore, I think they thought me possibly a good source. But that's irrelevant. What is relevant is that the police officially are supposed to be neutral in these situations. And clearly, when there's a conversation going on between a leader of a right-wing group and a lieutenant in the police department, which is not done because they're buddies or friends or whatever, but is done because it's in the interest of the police, we have a real problem. And this is something that shouldn't be happening, but is happening. I just want to make that clear.
And I want to add something here that's, I feel like I shouldn't have to lay this out, but here it is. We cannot ignore, in this formulation that we're talking about today, the role that race has played in the history of law enforcement in this country. From the very beginning, in fact, even the paramilitary organizational structure of modern American police is descended from the fugitive slave patrols that used to move around in the Old South trying to apprehend fugitive slaves. Race has always been woven in with the history of law enforcement in the United States, up to and including the present day. Why is there an uproar right now and an ongoing national dialogue about the use of force by police against people of color? Why? Because police disproportionately kill people of color. Race is an undeniable factor in everything we're talking about here today. And the fact that one of the groups that keeps showing up to these altercations is a white supremacist organization, I think goes a long way to explain why there are sympathizers within the Portland Police Bureau. There are racists within the Portland Police Bureau, just as there are racists within every police organization in the United States. It's been that way for as long as we've had police in the United States. And really, until we find some way to address that problem, this is never going to go away.
Okay, I think we should go back to the phones, 231-8187. Francis, you're next.
Hi. I wasn't sure, or I need to clarify the last conversation about whether or not people have been murdered by the police in this city.
Several have been. Yes.
Many, including Keaton Otis, Connie Hayes, Christopher Kalonji. We could go on and on and on. And it continues. And I think what concerns me the most, there may be good guys in the police force, but I want to know why they don't say anything. And that concerns me a great deal. Just recently, some did. They talked about the sergeant or whomever he was that advised him that if they come across homeless people in the cold, if they're white, take them to a shelter. If they're Hispanic, take them to detox. And if they're black, shoot them.
Whoa. Where did that come from?
This is just
Portland,
recently.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Portland, Oregon.
Just in the last few months. The officer was reportedly joking.
Right.
Why would he even
make those distinctions in the first place?
Right.
You know that, and what concerns me even more is the fact that our district attorney's office, for decades, they say, have been bringing cases to grand juries, and when they grand jury comes back with a not a true bill, which means there's not enough to proceed. They don't file it as not a true bill. They file it as, which is against the Oregon state law, they file it as unable to proceed so that they can bring it back. And they bring them back sometimes multiple times. But if they had filed original not a true bill, they would have to file that in court. And before they could bring a case back to a grand jury, they'd have to go to court to indicate why, how they think they can proceed, and they haven't done that for decades, and they just now got caught on that. A public defender realized what they were doing in one case, and it became evident that they've been doing it for a long time. And there was a statement issued by the DA's office saying that they've remedied the situation, but they haven't gone into any detail of it. And how many people's cases were brought maybe to a grand jury 3 or 4 times, and then when they're presented finally with a charge, the person pleads, you know, makes a plea deal to avoid time. You know, how often did that happen? We don't even know, because apparently this has been going on for the article said decades. To me, that's just,
well,
really bad.
No, I appreciate,
combined with these racist, and one thing about Antifa, I am a quandary there, because I asked one time, why are you wearing a mask? Well, so the police don't, so we're not identified. And I thought, well, if you're here for a solid, good purpose, who cares who identifies you? They bring to mind to me the agent provocateurs.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there. I also have a problem with Antifa protesters covering their faces. But if you consider that a lot of them are there for a fight, they show up to fight white supremacists. That's
so
why they cover their faces.
What if we left those whatever they are, Patriot Boys alone, let them have their little march, because there's not that many of them, you know, and just ignored themselves and didn't give them any publicity? Wonder how long they'd have any kind of anything going on.
Well, you're making a good point there. I actually think if you isolate them, they are less effective. If you create a situation where a potential riot could exist,
you're going to be the bad guy.
Exactly.
Are you suggesting we suffer fascists to march on our streets?
No, I think, again, here's where nonviolent resistance
works. I don't even know why we allow fascists to march on the street, actually.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because we have to...
They should be arrested initially. I mean, they don't have a... To me, they don't have a stand in an argument. They're wrong, period.
Well, that... Wait a minute, Francis.
In America, you don't get to be pro-fascist.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. That's part of our...
No.
That's part... No,
okay.
Listen, this is
so
important.
You get to be hateful, you get to be racist, you get to be
you
all
You do.
That because...
Unfortunately, the First Amendment protects the evil okay. as well as the good. That's how it is, right. and that's how it should be. That's unique to our country, and I support that.
Racist police officers who have a union now who can protect them killing people.
No. That isn't what I said at all. Let's be clear.
No, but that's what happened.
You moved from the question of demonstrators and whether they should be allowed to demonstrate to the question of what the police are.
No, I was being kind of facetious.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What I'm saying is that when you are there to confront and to be violent, then that's what happens. You know, and I don't know that that's the way to go. I just don't.
Well, the fact that the Proud Boys, et cetera, are provocative, apparently looking for a fight, apparently very aggressive, apparently advocating racism and supporting the Confederacy. And
maybe we should just
let me finish. Let me finish,
together.
Francis, please.
I'm sorry.
And
go ahead.
Supporting Nazism and so on. That's bad stuff. But under our system, they're allowed to do that. The problem
right.
we're having right now is that apparently there is some kind of special relationship between the police department and those proto-fascists.
And that is no surprise to anybody that's lived in our community long enough to see how the police operate.
No. Listen, Francis, thank you, as always, for your
right,
comments this
care.
Morning.
All right. Let's go to the phones again.
Hang on.
Or do you want to say something?
Yeah. Francis is right. This isn't a surprise. We need to be very clear, though. We don't know the extent of their relationship between the white supremacist demonstrators and the Portland Police Bureau. We know that it exists because these text messages prove it. We don't know how deep or how high that goes within the organization.
Okay.
Okay. coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio, Nobel Peace Prize nominated author David Swanson speaks on the abolition of war. Good luck with that, David. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein spends the hour on testimony taken recently in Tucson, Arizona, by the United Nations Commission on Refugees about the militarization of the United States of the U.S.-Mexico border. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Susanna Mars speaks with writer and actor Anya Pearson and director Jamie M. Ray about Made to Dance in Burning Buildings at Shaking the Tree Theater. Their work poses the question, how do we heal from trauma? At 11:30 in Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews photographer Sarah Graves about her work for the Portland Grids Project. All that and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and Megan, the number is 231-8187. What's our email address?
We don't do the email anymore, Joe.
What do we do?
That's so early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah.
We do the Facebook.
We do Facebook. The Facebook. We like Facebook.
Facebook.com/AbeandJoe, and we also tweet at HonestAbe72. And we also take, you know, phone calls, which is so 20th century. But we take those too.
You actually think that the wholly compromised net is better than the phone?
That's an irrelevant question. Better? In what way? I don't know.
We'll deal with that some other time. Let's go to Linda. Linda, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to say one thing to you and Abe is that Rose City Antifa is on the web. They're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You could message them and ask them to come on your show. It's not complicated.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware.
Also, I've always been able to walk up to them and talk to them. A complete stranger I am, and they have always been helpful.
Certainly.
So I'm not quite sure what's going on when you try.
I identified myself as affiliated with KBOO. That may have been the reason.
Well, no, because I've seen them talk to Teresa when she has a KBOO mic in her hand with KBOO all around it, and I wear KBOO buttons on the outside of my clothing when I'm down there.
I don't know. Maybe I just look like a fascist sympathizer, maybe. I don't know.
maybe that's it. So then I want to go on to the other thing. It's more than that just had a close and cozy relationship. That's the way I keep hearing people describe it. But when you say, I'm not going to arrest your guy on a warrant, and here's how he should evade a warrant, I think he should lose his job. I think, and
oh, I totally agree.
Just a guy. Yeah. Wait, let me go on to say he's the director of rapid response. That means in all those demonstrations where the cops were going at us, he was the director of rapid response, Nia. So he wasn't just one of them. He was directing their actions. And that article went on to say that he at times told them where other demonstrations were. Guess what? They went and attacked those demonstrations. That's on record, them attacking other demonstrations. Nia was basically giving them, I don't know if strategic advice, but certainly tactical advice, and illegally letting them off with a warrant. Do you think if that was a black man, a brown man with an active warrant, that they don't just snap you at the moment? I mean, this is ridiculous to call it cozy. It's collaboration with the right wing, and we should go to the bottom of it in investigating that in this city. And I just want to say that really clearly.
No, I agree with you. I'm glad you're clear.
Cozy relationship.
Yeah, I agree. That, I mean,
I don't think we have a difference here, but I'm glad you're emphasizing and making clear what the reality of it is, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, he was the head of that. He's the director of rapid response. Yeah. He geared all those when they kettled those people, when they fired those things on him, going way back to June. This guy's been doing it for a long time.
He is the director of that unit.
Look who he protects.
Yeah, I'm neither a lawyer nor a law enforcement officer, but it seems to me that the existence of a warrant for someone's arrest is itself reason enough to act on that warrant, right? Fact that he is texting Joey Gibson and saying, hey, we're not going to arrest your boy unless he does something stupid, that's to me seems the essence of corruption.
And that your boy was one who backed his van against people in a demonstration in Vancouver. He attempted to run his van into a crowd.
Yep, and he has so assaulted and injured people here in Portland.
The right-wing police are collaborating with the right wing, and they're in the highest positions of our police department, and we need a very thorough outside investigation.
I agree with you.
We need to rip these guys up and throw them out.
I agree with you that we need a thorough outside investigation. What we don't know yet is how high this goes.
Well, we know it goes to the director of rapid response, which is a high position.
Yeah, he's
in
a lieutenant.
Police.
Yep.
And I suspect Outlaw, who immediately turned that one demonstration on his head and pretended that the people who came armed with guns and violence were the people who got attacked by them. She lied from the very beginning, and she knows she lied. I'm not afraid to say that. Why should we be afraid to say that? She lied. She knew what happened at that demonstration, and she knew who was attacked and when. And this director was who was telling her and who was directing that demonstration. We just have to get clear. These are not going to be our friends ever, and they should not come out clean on this crap. I hope we get a lot more on them.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
231-8187. We have another caller.
Cheryl,
you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. I just want to say something. I've been involved with Multnomah County going back to 1996 with my son, and I'm going to tell you, in the process, we were lied to by the judge and by various other things of the outcome, and I've been going through this since 1996 up to the current time, and I can tell you I've been told this by other attorneys, that the police, the DA, it was Gray Horner at the time, who is now, I believe, in Clackamas County unless he's retired. This is just a system where, I'm going to say this because this is from my experience since 1996, are all in collaboration. The police, the DA, in prosecuting people, it doesn't matter whether you're innocent or not, talk you into a plea bargain and lie to you when you're 17, not call your parents, and, you know, on and on. This was about one of the first Measure 11 cases. And then the people who defended him, Bertone, he has now been taken out of, he cannot practice law. He did not handle the case properly. He didn't even do anything. And so I just want to say that I think the whole system, including the Sheriff's Association and on, is all tied in together and not for a good purpose, to serve the public and protect the public. I wouldn't call the police anymore. And I don't trust them myself. I don't trust the government or the police or anything. I really mean that. And it's a sad thing because I believed in innocence, you know, at that time. And I haven't believed in it since then. That's all I'm going to say. And I just want to make that clear. And I'm not saying this isn't manufactured. This is from real life. All right.
Okay. No, I appreciate what you're saying. And it is a dilemma. Yeah. It really is. And it's very serious.
It's still going on from 1996. It's still going on. And now we're, you know, we went from that stage to just outright killing people. And that just isn't blacks, but how about white teenagers where their mom called them and they were having mental episodes? And, you know, and the police do lie, because my son's sitting in jail right now from mental thing that happened, where he had to go in and say he was going to rob a bank to get the police to come to even help him. And then, you know, it's blown out of proportion, and the public defender. The police lied. The Portland police had no business even talking to him, and they made stuff up about him, which the public defender acknowledged. So this is getting pretty awful right now. Yeah, where the police are making up stories about somebody that's having a mental episode. You know, I mean, it's bad. Yeah, so they can put out all the brochures and all the information on TV. We're helping the mental, you know, people with problems and all this. You know what? I haven't seen evidence of that yet. I'm sorry to say. Well, I think it's all a bunch of talk, but very little happens to really help people in need. And this crisis is escalating. And, you know, look at the homelessness, the mental health crises. It's escalating to, you know, and they just keep on perpetuating nothing happening, you know. I mean, I don't get it. But where is our society going? That's what I'd like to know. Where are we going?
I want to thank you for the call, and I'm sorry for your troubles.
Yeah. Well, it's not just my troubles. I'm not the only person.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
Thousands of people are experiencing this. I've talked to them over the years. All right. Well, I'm glad you're talking about this stuff, and I hope somebody gets to the bottom of it. I hope a newspaper has a private investigator and we get some real journalism going in this country to expose all this stuff.
The Willamette Week seems to be doing their part.
Yeah, but it is interesting.
Thank you for the call.
Go ahead. Thank you for the call. The Sunday Oregonian piece is totally biased to the police position.
Yeah.
And I was shocked at that, because I know the person who wrote it, and I was very disappointed. And it didn't, as far as I know, reach out to any of the other parties involved.
No, it was pretty much an apology for the police bureau's communication with Gibson and his friends.
Okay, let's go on to the phones. 231-8187. Barth, you're next.
Good morning, gentlemen. Didn't hear your whole show, but the latest part, there's a couple meaty pieces. If you know the reporter that did the hack job on the police cooperation, as it were, then you should get in his grill a little bit, and you should put out letters to the editor and see if they will actually see print. You got to let people know when they screw up.
It's her.
Well, the article in the Oregonian was written by Maxine Bernstein, who I have known and appreciated the work of very much. This article is particularly, I don't know what the editors did to the original or if they indeed did anything, but the article is pretty much an apologia for the police. And that disappointed me.
Well, but that shouldn't be able to slide. That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
about that.
I appreciate that.
Your last, your second last caller said that the new police chief, Outlaw, is right up into all of this with her neck, essentially, and that the person in question was leading the rapid response, although he has been reassigned and he's no longer in rapid response, which I think is a small plus. But if this is the guy that gives her the reports, then it's not clear that she was complicit more than she was potentially poorly informed and poorly briefed. I don't want to throw her down the stairs here yet, but if this is the channel that told her what was going on, then it's possible that she got a very biased report.
So you're giving her the reasonable doubt.
Well, I think that's appropriate. I don't know much about her. I'm not terribly impressed with some of the things she's done or come out with, but that doesn't mean that she's an evil person.
No.
But I think that's an important distinction. That's all I'm going for there. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
I'd have to agree with that. I haven't been particularly impressed with Chief Outlaw's reaction to this particular set of situations between Antifa and the fascists. I didn't the way she cleared out that demonstration at the federal building. I think leaves some unanswered questions, and her remarks on the Lars Larson show were problematic as well. But if she chooses to do the right thing now, I think we should all support her in that. The right thing being an independent investigation of the police bureau.
Let's go to our next caller, 231-8187. Robbie, you're next.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, great. So I just wanted to, I was kind of laughing there at the last point about Daniel Outlaw. I've met Daniel Outlaw. I've actually hounded her multiple times during the Occupy ICE event that I was participating in. The Lars Larson show, when she went on there, pretty much should sum up exactly her point. And I'll get to my point now, which is basically I don't have faith in the system to hold her accountable, to hold the Portland police accountable, because if you heard what she said on the Lars Larson show, she was happy that she was able to beat our butts, as she put it. I think those were her words, right?
Yep.
Second of all, I mean, it's clear what side the police are on. Second of all, Sergeant Nia was the officer who was texting Joey Gibson. He is a liaison. Yes. He is the liaison for basically his job and role in the police department.
Lieutenant.
Is to talk to.
He's higher ranking than a sergeant. He's a lieutenant, and he's the head of the rapid response unit, or was.
Okay, so Sergeant Nia was in. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I've been in contact with him simply because of some of the work and groups that I'm with. He, you know, and if there's anybody that you should be giving the benefit of the doubt, it might be him. But given the text messages, I think it is also very clear which side he is on. I just don't see how we can be so forgiving of the police. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of upset about that. Hearing, you know, we're like, oh, you know, maybe they're not that evil. It's just like, no, actually they are. But the point that I'm going to bring up here that I tried to get an OPB reporter to report on because she witnessed it in Milwaukee a couple of years back. The Portland, and this is before Daniel Outlaw, the Portland police will dress up as a black bloc anarchist. These are tactics that they use. They've been caught across different police networks, have been caught dressing up as black bloc anarchists. I don't know if you know, I think it was in St. Louis. There was cops that beat up an undercover black bloc anarchist, and that came out through the reports. But also here in Portland, on January 20th, there's video evidence of a person who is not a part of Antifa who gets apprehended. This is stuff that I want to share with your listeners here, because this is a real tactic that the Portland police do. I was a part of Refuse Fascism, which was a group that organized on November 4th in 2017. Or actually, it was 2018. No, wait, 2017, over a year ago. When we did Refuse Fascism, I don't know if you remember, but that was where the Portland police actually sent an infiltrator into our group, and she was meeting with them, or they were meeting with them once a week, and basically providing all the information on our group that was trying to organize. They aren't doing this because they're trying to, and the individual that I was assuming as an instigator came into our group and was asking us, you know, he came up to me and he was like, hey, what kind of stuff are you into? What kind of stuff do you, you know, and I was telling him, you know, I do a lot of the Petalpalooza bike rides. I do a lot of the stuff out here. But basically, he was like, oh, well, what other type of stuff are you into? And he was fishing for stuff illegal. Eventually, another individual in the group came out and asked me what I thought about this guy. And I said, I think he's a cop. And he said, I think the same thing. And because he was asking people in the group if they wanted to boost stuff to get funds for our campaign. And we were like, what is boosting? And he goes, yeah, you know, we'll sell it, and we'll steal stuff and sell it on the new app. This was a person that we expected as a saboteur, as a cop. And this is exactly what they do. They infiltrate the groups. They try to bring us down. And it's not just for them trying to say, like, oh, well, we're going to dress up as an anarchist or an Antifa member and make sure that they're not going to do anything wrong. No, they dress up as it and then try to provoke it. Their side is very clear. And anybody who's giving them the leeway or the benefit of the doubt is probably going to fall to a talking point and kind of, I don't know, it's just hearing well, that. If that person who said Daniel Outlaw isn't evil, I would like him to meet her and, you know, ask those questions to her. And then if he still feels the same, that would be where. Anyway, I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
The term that you're looking for is agent provocateur, a good old French term. It means this person in the authority role who pretends to be one of you and encourages illegal activity so that your group is disallowed, as it were.
Yeah.
Hey, we're running out of time.
Wow, we could have talked about this for 3 hours.
Well, easily.
Easily.
We'll probably cover it in other contexts.
I'm sure we will. This is not.
And
the
I'm
end.
Still, I'm still waiting for the police chief to agree to an interview.
Yep. This is not the end of the story. I guarantee it.
No, and she could name the time and the place, and I'll even submit the questions in advance.
Thanks, everybody, for your calls and your comments, and for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week.
From the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Spark a Girl's Interest in Engineering, a Women of Color panel, on Thursday, February 21st at 10 a.m. at the Abundant Life Church in Portland. In honor of Engineers Week, Spark a Girl's Interest in Engineering features a panel of 6 local women of color engineers talking about their career paths and answering questions. The panel is moderated by Cheryl Norris. Again, that's Spark a Girl's Interest in Engineering, a Women of Color panel, on Thursday, February 21st at 10 a.m. at the Abundant Life Church, 3935 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Nobel Peace Prize nominated author David Swanson speaks on the abolition of war. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein spends the hour on testimony taken recently in Tucson, Arizona, by the United Nations Commission on Refugees about the militarization of the United States of the U.S.-Mexico border. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Susanna Mars speaks with writer and actor Anya Pearson and director Jamie M. Ray about Made to Dance and Burning Buildings at Shaking the Tree Theater. Their work poses the question, how do we heal from trauma? And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews photographer Sarah Graves about her work for the Portland Grid Project. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support.